step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again. This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 499. I am Lisa Sheps, and I am joined by my lovely co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
Hello. You're listening to us on KOOP, HD1, HD3, Hornsby. We stream this live today and every day at KOOP.org. Remember, folks, if it's theater, it's on Offstage and On the Air. Do not go away.
Show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Yeah. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
It is Wednesday, January 9th, 2019. This is our first show. No, it's our second show of 2019. On the show today, we have Script Works in Hyde Park Theater and their Frontera Fest, long, short, and everything in between Fringe. And different stages will be here talking about the Magic Fire. And of course, we're going to have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, New York, New York, and New York. We'll be right back. Nicole Shiro.
Lisa Sheps.
I believe in you.
I believe in you.
I believe in you. That was Mr. Daniel Radcliffe.
Yes.
We're going to talk about him a couple times today.
You know what? He may believe in you.
He may believe in you. So, first of all, before I get into why I played that song, I'm going to check in with you. How are you doing?
I'm here.
That's about all you can say, right? Are you enjoying 2019? It's been 9 days already. You must have some good things
to
talk about.
Well, I've had some ups and downs already. So I experienced some really bad football that I paid a lot of money for. So that was a really bad experience. But then I realized 2019 is the year where I get to see Justin Timberlake and Hugh Jackman. So then I got a little excited.
There
went,
you go.
There's some things to look forward to in 2019. All right. Well, it got all better.
Let me introduce the folks that are here with us in the studio. We have Jenny Underwood. Hi, Jenny.
Hi.
Hold on. You got to get right to that microphone.
Hi. So, how are you?
Any better and I would be twins. We have Karen Jambon. Hi, Karen.
Hello. Good to be here.
Norman Blumensot.
Hello.
Christy Moore. Hi.
Howdy.
And Ken Webster.
Good afternoon.
And saving the best for last, Miss Bernadette Nason. How
Hello.
Are you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
So I played that song. So does anybody know, does everybody know the context of what that song is when he says, I believe in you from How to Succeed in Business Without
yes.
Really Trying?
Yes.
He's singing to himself in the mirror.
He
feels pretty. So that sort of comes into what
we like to call that a personal moment.
It's a personal moment. Well, we call it sort of thinking very highly of oneself.
Yeah, well. You know, you don't ever have a pep talk with yourself, ever?
Never.
Never?
God, never.
Oh, they're kind of fun.
Yeah, never do it. But this wasn't really a pep talk in context of this play. He was loving himself. So this leads me to one Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Yes.
Who is everywhere in the news right now.
Yes.
First of all, the biggest thing is Hamilton. Who here has seen Hamilton? 1, 2, 3, 4. Half of us have seen Hamilton. Did y'all see it in New York?
Yes.
Yeah. So you gotta do the microphones when to.
Yes.
We
saw it in New York.
Where'd you see it, Christy?
I saw it in Chicago.
I saw it in Chicago too. Mm-hmm. We may have seen the same cast, which I believe was the weakest part of that show.
The cast in Chicago.
Yeah.
I saw it like in the maybe third week of the run.
You probably saw a whole different.
Yeah, I saw Manny Gonzalez.
But they have hit a huge record. They broke the $4 million. A week number.
Crazy.
That's
crazy.
At least 10 people who saw it then.
Yeah, it's true. Well, and it's in the majority of the reason why all these numbers are doing what they're doing is because Hamilton instigated this premium pricing mm-hmm. thing, which everybody has heard me rail about on this show quite a bit. But that's a pretty big deal that they've hit the $4 million mark. And, you know, shows have regularly been doing $3.5 million per week, but $4 million, that's a pretty big deal. Mm-hmm. I would like to get that.
I would be okay with it too.
I'd be okay. I'd even do it for 2 weeks. I'd be okay with $2 million a week.
Yeah, you know what? I wouldn't argue with that either.
I'm just saying. The Third National is set to open in 2 days. The Third National Tour of Hamilton.
Dun, 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 dun.
Does everybody know where it's opening?
Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico, my heart's devotion. Let it sink back in the ocean.
We have I love that today our guests have been singing since the first note. It's very exciting.
Actually, now that I think about it, that lyric is not so good to sing about Puerto Rico.
Not these days.
Yeah. No. Yeah, I never really thought of that until this moment. So it is opening in Puerto Rico with Lin-Manuel Miranda in the lead role. He's given a lot to the state of Puerto Rico, the territory of Puerto Rico, whatever it is, should be a state.
They don't want to be.
It depends who you talk to.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. The overall vote is part of it. But it is, yes, because I have a lot of friends that are like, yes, and a lot of friends that are like, no. Yeah, and I can truly see both sides that I'm like, oh, that is a tough decision.
Well, I can't see both sides. But I mean, to me, it would be, and again, we're not a political show.
No.
But to me, it's either I'm my own country or I'm a state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The territory thing's got to blow.
Yes.
To be succinct about it. So the final thing I want to talk about, Lin-Manuel Miranda, and this is what I want to discuss. So we've all heard the woes of the Drama Bookshop. It was all set to close, and it is closing this month. Looking for a place to reopen. Lin-Manuel Miranda made a very big marketing push to get a lot of people out there. And so it was just announced yesterday or the day before that he and some of his other cohorts in Hamilton, as well as one of the Niederlanders, are buying the bookstore.
It was himself, two other folks from Hamilton, and Niederlander.
Actually, and I found this interesting. I thought all they're paying for it is paying for the inventory and paying off their past debts, and it's theirs. So there's been my first thought was very, and probably continues, was not on the best, not in the best light. I really think he's marketing himself more than helping the community, because there's no reason. It's, to me, he shouldn't have made it. We should not know it's him purchasing it. He is everywhere these days, and I believe it's more self-promotion than anything else.
I hear you.
That's what I think. Mm-hmm. Thoughts? I see Christy Moore's looking at me like, you're out of your mind. He's a god.
Well, I don't know about the publicity aspect of it. I mean, I think actually his name on things helps these days. And so, I mean, yes.
Not in this case.
It's
not
oversaturated to us because of the world that we're in. But in the world in general, it's not really.
But why wouldn't see to me?
I think anybody that wants to save the Drama Bookshop, amen.
Oh,
go
no,
for
I'm,
it.
I'm,
it should
I'm
be done.
I'm glad it's happening.
Yeah.
But to me, it should have happened without fanfare. I don't think that they're...
Speaking of fanfare... Sorry.
Oh,
is it you?
That's my phone, and it's vibrating. I turned off the ringer for the very first time in my career.
It sounded like probably Lin-Manuel calling to protest. Like,
the ringer is quieter than having the ringer off.
True. He does listen to the show. Anyway, I don't know. It's just when I saw that he bought it, I just breathed this sigh of like, please let's stop with Lin-Manuel Miranda. And as Nicole will attest, I am. /was/am a big Lin-Manuel Miranda fan.
But
I love
his
work.
They also help people follow the bookstore wherever it goes, mm-hmm. and increase the traffic in the store, which would help the store.
Yeah, except I don't think that it will. I mean, the people. It's an industry store that helps the industry. You will get some tourists that will go there because of the name Lin-Manuel Miranda, but not very many.
It's interesting when you read all the articles. They talk about the Hamilton store or the other store. Yeah. It's
right.
Not ever really about the store. It's really about him. It's not even really about Niederlander. It's about him. Every article that was about the bookstore. So I get your frustration. I was annoyed myself.
Yeah, just a little bit. So I don't know.
Bookstore story in Porto, Portugal.
Uh-huh.
There's a bookstore that was the model for J.K. Rowling in the Harry Potter series.
Yep.
It was almost closing when that book came out. And all of a sudden, there was a huge increase in traffic. And the guy was like, what the heck's going on? People are coming in. Nobody's buying anything. And so somebody told him the story that this was from Hogwarts. And of course, he started charging €5 and then started putting English language books, classic books near the doorway where you're tempted to buy a book as it came from that bookstore. Mm-hmm. You know? Enough publicity helps.
Yep. So I'll be happy to be. I will love it if it is like incredibly profitable. But their goal is not to be profitable. Their stated goal is to break even. And the owners of the Drama Bookshop, which is run by the man who started, and I really should know their name, but I don't. The man who started it's daughter runs it right now, and they have broken even more years than not. How often can you lose money and do it? So we did have an opening on Broadway. Is this our first opening this year? Maybe our first opening this year. Choir Boy opened. Yes. Choir Boy is a transfer from, kind of a transfer from Off-Broadway. It was on Off-Broadway 4 years ago. But it's back. It's at the Samuel J. Friedman Theater. It is... boy, why did I just lose the playwright's name? It's terrible.
Terrell Evan McCraney.
Thank you. Who also wrote Moonlight, for those people that watch movies. Jeremy Pope is making his Broadway debut in the lead role. And Jeremy Pope, from everything I've read, so generally speaking, the reviews were good to mixed.
Yeah, so. None of them were like, hip hip hooray!
None of them were
but
great.
But they weren't like... King Kong.
It's interesting when you read Jesse Green's review of it, you go, oh God, he hated it. And at the very end, he calls it really wonderful and made it a critic's pick.
Yeah.
So, but the review is really not complimentary throughout it. And it tells the story of an upper middle class, mostly African American boarding school, and one young man who is in the choir who is LGBT, and it deals with a lot of his a lot of bullying around there. Again, the Jeremy Pope makes his Broadway debut, and Jesse Green just loved this guy. Most of the other critics did as well. This is a Manhattan Theater Club presentation. It's a Manhattan Theater Club presentation. They produced it. Trip Coleman as a staging did the direction, and Jesse Green called it tonally blurry staging.
Yeah, I was about to say he did not like it.
Yeah. So I did want to call out one of the paragraphs in Jesse Green's article. And it says, it talks about a problem eating away at the credibility, and this is, quote, most of the characters as written. Two of the choir boys, Junior, played by Nicholas L. Ash, and David, Caleb Eberhardt, get approximately one trait each. Junior is pleasantly dim. David is tortured by something you'll see coming a mile away. So there's he talked a lot about the trite writing of this piece. You did not necessarily hear from other reviews, but that's what he said. So there was a lot of talk of it not being terribly original.
Jesse's writing has been interesting the last few months. It's like I read something and I'm like, oh, wait, no, that isn't what you were saying.
Well,
it's been like that a lot lately that I was like, oh, wait, no, okay. I mean, there's nothing. It's just interesting. I wonder what personally is going on that his writing has taken this tone.
I don't know.
That's all. I'm just curious. Curious thoughts by Nicole. Maybe he'll call
curious
me.
Curious thoughts. That's going to be a YouTube station pretty soon. The Daily Beast, Tim Tiemann, said Choir Boy has grown in theater size since 2013's off-Broadway success, and some of the elements have grown beautifully in accordance. Prime among them is Pope's performance. So everybody pretty much likes
I was like,
that.
Everyone loved the Pope.
Tell us something about Jeremy Pope, because I'm embarrassed to say that I don't know who he is.
Don't know who he's he's an actor.
Okay, that's all we know.
An actor.
I thought that you'd all say, how terrible that I don't know.
No,
I know who he is.
He's a young actor. This is his Broadway debut. Okay. Virtually.
So we don't know him from
unknown
anything.
Probably very well known if you were in New York in the theater scene there on a daily basis.
I think he's like the one everybody's been watching, Jeremy Pope.
But here's a picture of him. Hold on. I'll show it. I'll show everybody, including our listening audience. He's the one getting his hair trimmed. That's Jeremy Pope. And hold on, let me show it to the audience.
He's very handsome.
Yeah, it's like he is a handsome devil.
He's very handsome. Mm-hmm. So anyway, other critics. Let's just choose one more. Let's go. I'm going to do two more. Variety's Marilyn Stasio said the play transfers nicely under the sure-footed direction of Trip Cullman from Manhattan Theater Club's smaller studio space. And Sarah Holdren said she just called it an a cappella musical. So there's a lot of music in it, but it's, I believe, Motherless Child. It's music we all know. Evidently the musical parts and the choreography is really nice.
Shazam,
that's it. Choir Boy. See it. See it. Okay. So I just came back from New York City.
You did.
I was there working and didn't have a lot of time, but I was able to see two shows.
Oh, you thought you were only going to get one in.
I thought I was able to get one in, but I had another night off.
Sneaky little devil.
And Monday night, thinking nothing was going to be going, I was able to score a orchestra seat to a show that is closing next week, and that is Lifespan of a Fact.
Oh,
and I know Jenny and Karen seen it because we talked about it a little bit before the show. Y'all loved it, correct?
Yeah, we really enjoyed it, yes.
Yeah, hold on. I'm going to turn your microphones up if I can do that somehow. So I saw it clearly late in the run, and this is to refresh everybody's memory. This is the play that stars Bobby Cannavale, Daniel Radcliffe, and Cherry Jones. Can't remember it's based on an article, an essay that was written, there are three playwrights credited with writing it. Mm-hmm. And it basically talks about an essayist who writes a story to paint a picture. And it's truthful, but it's not factual. And a fact checker that comes in to work on that story and how depending on which point of view you come from, whether that sterilizing down to the facts takes away the story or vice versa. Is that yeah. what y'all would say?
I was
pretty
much? That was a very nice summary, mm-hmm. Lisa Sheps.
Daniel Radcliffe did a lovely job. I thought he had fun. The staging was fun too. So mm-hmm. they start in a very sterile kind of business standpoint, and then I will tell you this, because the other show I saw was The Ferryman, so it was sort of a rinse and repeat in terms of the scenic, because they both started in one with this hard set in front, both flew out to a living room kitchen set mm-hmm. with a slanted ceiling in the same direction, actually, from stage left to stage right, going up and down. So I thought that was interesting.
That is kind of funny.
Yeah, but it was... it was fun. I thought Daniel Radcliffe was a standout.
He was.
Followed by Bobby Cannavale, and I was not terribly fond of Cherry Jones. I was disappointed in the piece as a whole, only because I was expecting so much. But I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Shazam.
Shazam. Which leads me to the other thing I saw, which was The Ferryman. Which is amazing.
Yes.
And again, Karen and Jenny saw it. Anybody else get the chance to see it? And it's 22 people on stage. There's an article in the Times last week, and I believe I printed it out. And a goose.
And a rabbit.
Which the man behind me during intermission very confidently exclaimed that was a puppet. It was not a puppet.
Did you turn around and
tell him that? I didn't. I decided
because he
was trying to impress his date. He said, did you see how he was holding it? You could tell it was a puppet.
I would have turned around and just, nope.
Totally not a puppet, especially if he had read the New York Times article. Look at the article. Oh, it is. It's sitting right here on the top. It's called Choreographed Cacophony of Ferryman, and it shows the backstage machinations of this show. In Act Two, there's a whole scene around food that they make, a goose dinner.
Yeah.
And we see the goose, which is not a puppet, and then we see the goose as food. And they're making this dinner for 17 people. That makes up this Irish family. So it's a show that takes
Jez
place.
Jez Butterworth loves to have food in his shows.
And
just
there is
saying.
Food. And he did, you know, he did a
the
great
river,
job
it was
staging
all
this.
About the trout. When it's all about the goose.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It's great.
Yeah. Well, it's not all about the goose. The goose
no,
just
no I'm just saying, like, yeah. it's just yeah. a very interesting quality yeah. to have in your... Mm-hmm.
But
now,
this
now
is what,
you haven't made it clear. Do they kill the goose on stage?
Not on stage.
No.
But they
no.
Okay. So it's just one goose every night.
One goose every night. And she actually laid an egg one night off stage at some point. Yes.
Yes. And they say that in this article. So I truly recommend reading this article. You'll
better
see.
Better off than on, right?
Yeah, exactly. I know. It could have been fun.
Once we post it, it'll be at offstageonair.com. Yeah. It's really great to see. But the show itself, if you get a chance to go to New York to see
Phenomenal.
The Ferryman, it's actually there's a cast change that's going in this week with Brian D'Arcy James in the lead role,
yes.
Amongst others. Fortunately, I did not get to see Patty. Do y'all remember his last name? Patty. The
Considine?
Yes, Patty Considine in the lead role. I saw the understudy, who was awesome. Mm-hmm. But the woman that played, and I don't have her name, of course not, that played the lead female role was amazing. They're leaving, but I think that they're probably getting really great replacements. The show itself has so many different themes. Mm-hmm. It takes place during in Ireland during the 70s, when they were doing the hunger strikes, and the IRA was very, very active, and it has political under and overtones, but it's all about family and all that stuff. So it shifts in these different things. When you say at the end, what's it about? You can't really say specifically about one thing. They have an elderly grandmother who came on stage and was kind of comatose for the first 20 minutes of it. Huh. And then she lights up, and it's like, there's some just, characters as written were so layered and so beautiful. I can see Hyde Park Theater, different stages, doing this really soon when they release the rights.
Especially with that set, because any theater space here could certainly accommodate the set.
Sure. The set was it had a ceiling that was at about 30 feet, and it had a stairway going all the way up to a second floor that you didn't see. It was pretty amazing. And the lighting was really good as well, because when you light a ceilinged show, that poses a lot of problems.
Yeah.
But they did some very interesting lighting.
Well, and having a fire erupt on stage, that wouldn't be hard either.
No. In this article tells you how they do that fire every night.
Yeah.
Ah, and that's another good thing about this article is there was no argument. Well, there started to be an argument. The producers did not want to hire an infant. They wanted to use an analog or a doll, and they said no, it had to be an infant. So there is indeed an infant on stage.
Well, I want to see either Norman or Ken actually hold auditions for that 6-month-old infant. I'd sell tickets to
the Broadway show has two of them. So there's one standing by just in case there's a last-minute issue with one. And then there are four children. And they are all double cast, and the ones I saw were just amazing.
They were great. Yeah.
Just amazing. They're singing, there's joy, you laugh, you cry, it's better than Cats.
Mm. Meow.
What isn't better than Cats? The Ferryman, it's a top critic's pick by Lisa Sheps.
Dun, dun, dun.
Please do go to offstageonair.com and see this link for the... for this article from the New York Times called "The Choreographed Cacophony," written by Sarah Lyle. It's really, really nice. Yeah, that's the end of that. Let's see what else is on my list. Speaking of, we talked about Hamilton hit a record of $4 million. There's another show that hit a record for the highest grossing straight play on Broadway, which is a ticket I tried to see. I could have gotten, but I would have had to take a mortgage on my house to see it. Which is probably why it's grossing, but To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Grossed $1.6 million. And for a straight play, that's a lot. Typically, tickets are, in general, less money than musicals, and they're in smaller houses. And this is, they're at the Booth, which is a small house.
Mm-hmm.
I went there to try to get a ticket. I could get a ticket, but an obstructed view for $300 or a decent seat for $600, and that's face value, folks.
Mm-hmm.
So I said no. But here's interesting. They started performing on November 1st of 2018, and they have not played to an empty seat.
Not crazy.
They've been 100% or more every week.
I will say they have spent a great deal of money on marketing, because the commercials are on every other second. When I was home for Christmas, I was like, I get it. To Kill a Mockingbird is playing.
Funny. I didn't see it on TV when I was
there. Oh, it was like
And I kept switching channels, and I was like, okay, To Kill a Mockingbird is here. And it was the one, and it was in every paper. It was everywhere that I was like, oh, this is a big marketing campaign. No wonder ticket prices are so high.
But I would
say it was right.
That's true. I would like to have seen it. We're running out of time, so I will direct people to offstageonair.com because one of our own made it into the New York Times at the Under the Radar Fringe Festival, The Rude Mex.
Dun, dun, dun.
And called The Cold Record. Kirk Lynn wrote and is performing it. And it's an interesting thing. And the review, Jesse Green, again, wasn't terribly kind to them. But I just loved, you know, seeing, and this was on their front page. Alex, I cannot pronounce her new last name.
Basiaku Shah.
Thank you.
I was like, boy.
I knew somebody would be able to do it. So she's the director of record. And basically, Kirk gets suggestions from the audience about music, and then he plays the music. The biggest issue Jesse Green seemed to have was, is this performance? And where is the difference between performance? Where's that line? When do you say we're theater or we're, you know, a group of people getting around talking about music? So it was interesting, but I loved seeing them in the New York Times. And it was in, the headline is Hate, Hope, and Healing at Under the Radar Festival. And there were three reviews, and the Under the Radar Festival has like a zillion shows, and they chose three, and our local group was one of them. So that's great. Mazel tov to them.
It's a really wonderful show.
Have you seen it?
I was fortunate enough to see it twice.
What was some of the music that was?
Oh, well, depends on the audience you're with, but.
But when you were there.
Oh, let's see. There was, a lot of old punk rock.
Yeah.
There were quite a few out of the small audience.
Did you see it? Yeah. Cause that's the other thing. It's 20 people in the audience in New York. Did you see it in New York? Or you saw it
both times in Austin.
So how does it work? I mean, is there a disc jockey that can play everything from classical to the most current music?
In the workshop production, he had a little bit of lead time because he asked the invited audience to
submit.
They do the same thing online for this. It's all submitted in advance. Yes.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So it's interesting.
Like there has to be something somewhat similar with that structure. That makes sense.
The final thing I'm going to say, and we are running out of time, but Actors Equity is on strike, kids.
Yes.
We are on strike for profit sharing and the creation of workshops. And so those of us that are equity members or IA members now have signed. Well, all the unions have signed on. Nobody's crossing the picket lines. And it makes a certain amount of sense. There's a lot of shows that are developed in workshop or what we're now calling devised. Mm-hmm. And actors play a big part of that. So they see none of the profits. And they want profit sharing. And when you get a show like Hamilton, which those performers would have been affected by this. And granted, 99% don't recoup. They aren't profitable. But if they are profitable, the actors that originated it should share in those profits.
Don't I believe in Hamilton they do.
Yes, they do. They
I was
did,
about
they
to say that was the...
But that's not because of the union.
No.
Or that was
no,
because...
No, that was because of Lynn.
Right. So...
And there's three shows that are currently affected by this that kind of started this whole...
Yeah.
...stuff going on.
True that. The current... Those are the ones that are currently...
Almost Famous is one of them, and I now can't think of the other two, but there were three... Shoot, Almost Famous is one.
I'll tell you, I have it here, and I was trying to move on, but but we won't. Where are they? Almost Famous, August Rush, and Heart of Rock and Roll.
Huey Lewis.
And then there's another one, an untitled Michael Jackson jukebox musical.
Someone said, stop the madness, please.
So let's take a break.
Just go on strike.
And play Nicole Shiro's favorite union song. We'll be right back. 7.5 cents
doesn't buy a hell of a lot. Hi, this is Marilyn May, and you're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsby, Austin. Stay listening.
Marilyn May, that was our random legal ID. That's the end of that story. So nobody was impressed by Marilyn May?
I was, yes. I am.
Let me tell you something. That woman can talk.
No doubt.
She can talk. I had to... normally when I do these interviews, I don't like to... I like to try to like not cut them, not edit them. But this, we talked for probably 3 hours and 45 minutes. So we
That's
had a lovely,
long time.
We had a lovely discussion. Let's switch and talk to Ken Crispy and Bernard Crispy.
Crispy. Almost, not quite. I will be by the end of it, though. But
Crispy Moore, that's my new name for you. Which, interestingly enough, was my sorority name in college. Ken Webster, Christy Moore, and Bernadette Nason, you guys are here to talk about Frontera Fest, Long Fringe, Short Fringe, Mi Casa es Su Casa, and Mi Casa es Su Teatro.
See.
You can't... I should never do anything by memory.
Or in Spanish, I think.
yo hablo español like a native. So tell us about this year's Frontera Fest. First of all, tell people what Frontera Fest is.
Frontera Fest is a five-week-long performance festival. This year we have three components in it. The Short Fringe for pieces up to 25 minutes in length, and there are five shows a night that runs at Hyde Park Theater. We are very pleased to have the return of the Long Fringe this year, which is for pieces 45 to 90 minutes long, and we have eight shows there at Ground Floor Theater. And then the aforementioned Mi Casa es Su Teatro, which will be on February 9th this year.
Awesome. And we love Frontera Fest. Short Fringe is all so fun. You've always said if you don't like a piece, just stick around because the next one can be that much better.
If you hate it, it's almost over. Yeah. And if you like it, it's almost over.
So what are some of the highlights this year of this year's festival?
We have a lot of great Short Fringe and Long Fringe so far. Every year, it's really an amazing combination of established people in the local art scene and brand new kids who have done very little in town. Right. So on any given night, you might see some old timers where the cast has 100 years combined experience and then a group doing their first play in front of a live audience. And we've got the amazing Speed Levitch. Is doing a Long Fringe piece. He was in that documentary called The Tour from a few years ago. Yeah. Did you ever see that?
I did not.
He's doing a piece based on a podcast that he does that sounds very, very interesting. But we've got all the descriptions of the Long Fringe and the Short Fringe at the website.
What's that web address?
It's HydeParkTheater.org.
HydeParkTheater.org. We're always very, very excited about Frontera Fest. We're really excited that Long Fringe is back because that does give an opportunity. There's a lot of theater companies that they get this really wonderful opportunity to produce their show, and they get... how many performances this year?
They get four performances.
Four performances this
guaranteed,
year.
Guaranteed, and they get all the box.
Yeah. So it's really a great opportunity. And then Short Fringe is just, it's just fun on so many different levels.
And we're international this year. We have someone coming from Canada to perform in the Long Fringe.
Canada is coming in the Long Fringe.
And we've got somebody from Los Angeles, somebody from San Francisco, who's actually coming back. Lindsay Greer is coming back. Sykes. And... in the Short Fringe, we've got New York, we've got LA, we've got San Francisco. We don't market this anywhere besides Austin. And people find us.
People find us, yeah.
Yeah, because we don't give them anything to come from afar.
I do want to just talk about, because Lindsay Sykes had contacted me, and I promised her I would mention that show. It's called Pretty Shiny Cage. It plays January 22nd, amongst other things. It's called a Silly... Sexy, scandalous new performance art piece.
And sounds a bit like mine.
Yeah, and we'll be having artwork from her, either her husband or herself. No, it's her in the lobby at Ground Floor Theater at our gallery.
Oh, cool.
Oh, that's cool. I thought you were having Deb Laux.
That's who it is. Never mind.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Never mind.
Jim Laux from LA is coming to do his show.
That's what it is.
Booger Red and his wife's. Our artwork is going to be in your gallery.
But it's like still all connected and tied
it
all
is.
In.
It's all in the Frontera Fest bubble.
I didn't realize I'd spoken to a couple people. Everybody sort of merges into one in my little pea brain of a mind. And Bernadette, you are performing a piece in short fringe.
I am. I love doing the short fringe. I like doing all of it, actually. But short fringe is just exciting because it's, as I say, it's you're on 1 minute and off the next, and that's it. If you mess up, you're done.
It's true. Well, yeah, if you mess up, you're done. But you could still get voted in as best of, even
well,
if you mess
true.
Up.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I get lucky occasionally.
Tell us about your piece.
Well, 30 years ago, I worked in Dubai as a general manager's secretary in a resort hotel. And one particular night, I had some misadventures. And I thought I'd read just a little tiny piece about the following morning.
Okay, we'll hear a little piece of it right now.
Okay,
before we do, tell us which week are you providing?
I am in the first week, and I'm on Wednesday, the 16th of January.
Okay, so this is Bernadette Nason doing a short piece from her piece, which is entitled...
A Slippery Slope.
A Slippery Slope.
I drove into the hotel grounds, and as I passed the area where I'd emptied out my handbag into the bougainvillea, I got a vague recollection of the events of the night before. Ooh, I giggled like a silly schoolgirl. How wicked I was! But as soon as I walked into the hotel... I knew that something was wrong. There was a pall over the place, an atmosphere you could carve with a ceremonial Bedouin dagger. The staff were talking in hushed tones. It was obvious that something terrible had happened. Now, I know what you're all thinking. Uh-oh, Bernie's in trouble. No, no, it never even occurred to me that I might be in trouble. Remember, I didn't think I'd done anything wrong. Frankly, I barely remembered I'd done anything at all. As a result, I wasn't afraid to approach Carol, our front office manager. "What's going on?" I asked. "Oh, dear," she said. "It's Mel the DJ. She's been suspended." "Mel? Suspended? What on earth for?" I asked innocently. "Well," she said, "I heard she was a bit pissed at the end of the party last night. She got caught stealing a bottle of booze from the table." It was as if a bucket of cold water had been thrown in my face. Actually, that would have been a good thing, because suddenly my hangover had appeared. I felt sick and a bit woozy. "What's going to happen to her?" I asked. Carol shook her head. "I don't know," she said, "but your boss is in a foul mood. I bet he gives her the sack."
Gives her the sack. What a wonderful story. And it goes on from there. And to hear the rest, you will have to get information.
Yeah, you actually have to find out what happened at the beginning.
At the beginning. Sounds good. Sounds wonderful. And Bernadette, also, you're a wonderful storyteller. And that it just exemplifies that.
Well, I hope so.
It sounds
that's
like
what
there's
I'm
a
doing.
Good story to be told.
That's what I'm doing. Well, that's excellent. So are there any other surprises or any other jewels that you want to,
Well, a lot of the new folks, we haven't seen their work yet. We will see them when they do their tech rehearsals.
Yes.
So we'll be better equipped to tell you who the bright young stars are.
And it's quite an interesting little...
We're as surprised as everyone else about what happens at Frontera Fest, frankly.
It's the kind of thing that if you have not been a participant in, that's all. It's also open to anybody that wants to apply to be part of it.
Anybody.
And it's a fantastically well-oiled machine, and it's totally worth seeing and being a part of. What are the dates of? Oh, anything about Mi Casa Su Teatro? Anything special about that?
Well, it's taking shape as we speak. It's going to be curated by Travis Tate, mm-hmm. Who's a fabulous writer and performer here in town, and. Yeah, so as far as the short fringe goes, it runs February, no, it doesn't. It runs January 15th through February 16th. Every Saturday is the best of the week, and the final week is best of fest. So there is a slightly competitive aspect to this where we have panelists that come, and the audience also gets to vote every night. So that's not the most important part of it to us, but you know, people like to know that they're seeing the best of something.
Yes.
So
yep.
We tell them that.
Well, great. Where can folks go to get more information?
HydeParkTheater.org.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for coming on.
Oh, thanks
thank
for having
you.
Me.
And unfortunately, we won't see you backstage because there will be no backstage at Offstage today.
That is scandal.
It is scandal. It's awful. We'll do it next week on our 500th show. That was Ken Webster, Christy Moore, and Bernadette Nason of Scriptworks and Hyde Park Theater's Frontera Fest. The Short Fringe is January 15th through February 16th at Hyde Park Theater. The Long Fringe is January 21st and through February 2nd at Ground Floor Theater. And Mi Casa Su Teatro is on February 9th all around the city. More information can be found at hydeparktheater.org. And this is... actually, Dudley Moore. Is it Dudley Moore? I don't know. Anyway, it's from Beyond the Fringe. Yeah. And it's
yes,
called...
That is Dudley Moore.
Yeah, I didn't write it down.
Yeah, I've talked about him three times this week.
Dowchester Chansons. We'll be right back. Maybe not. Oh, you know what I did? We have to... So tell us about why you've been talking to about Dudley Moore.
My brother and I just brought him up in the car ride home, which was ironic. And then I thought someone was rebroadcasting Arthur I saw on TV, and I got all excited. But then I was it's Russell Brand. Yeah. Why can't anyone play the old one? Because I was talking about Peter Allen beforehand.
And here he is.
Yeah.
Lord, we are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air. I am Lisa Sheps, and who are you?
I am Nicole Shiro.
Great.
I am your friend and co-host.
Awesome. Very quickly, we have no time to do this. I just want to, locally, Paper Chairs is doing a very interesting thing with the Austin Public Library called Reconnoiter. It's an installation piece that sounds very interesting. You can get more information by Googling Paper Chairs if you're interested. Let's just run right to Today in Theater History, shall we?
Go.
Let's go.
Let's go. Today in Theater History.
Today in Theater History.
What happened, Lisa Sheps?
Norman, you remember back in 1890.
Yes, I do.
This is a playwright, Carol Capek, is born in Bohemia. You probably heard of this playwright. Have you?
Or you are.
Yes. You are. Oh, my God. Are you are?
Yep.
You guys are the smartest people.
Why would you doubt this group that's sitting here?
You remember doing Emily Marty in the Macropolis case, right?
Of course.
The woman who lives 100 years.
Yes.
Yes.
And do you know what popular term was coined in that show, Are You Are?
Robot.
Robot. Exactly. Lovely.
Dun, 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 dun.
In 1940, James Thurber had his debut as a playwright with The Male Animal that he co-wrote with Elliot Nugent, and it starred Gene Tierney and played for 243 performances.
People don't do James Thurber a lot.
No. You don't see the Thurber Carnival very often
anymore. No, I did that show.
Oh, well, there you go. Maybe that's why nobody does it anymore.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
No, it's the humor. It's, you know, yeah. humor... comes and goes.
It does.
1961, Eugene Ionesco's Rhinoceros ran at the Longacre Longacre Theater, and the actor, one of the actors won Best Actor, somebody named Zero Mostel. Yep.
Interesting.
Also 61? In that show was 61, Eli Wallach and Morris Charnofsky.
Oh.
1978, Mary Martin made her final Broadway opening night in Do You Turn Somersaults.
I saw that.
Did you really?
Did you?
Yeah.
It only ran 16 performances.
I saw one of those 16.
Oh, my. That was, well.
I don't remember. I went because it was Mary Martin.
Yeah.
And remember very little else about it.
Well, that was her last show.
Yes.
How awesome is that?
But your face lit up that you were there. So
it was...
special for what it was.
Mm-hmm. And this is also the day in 2004 that Spalding Gray disappeared. He was later found in the Hudson River, and it was deemed a suicide. Mm-hmm. And then also in 2005 on this date, Idina Menzel had her final performance of Wicked. But interestingly enough, she missed the show because she had an injury the day before. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, she went through the trap door, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And she showed up in a tracksuit at the end.
Yeah. She went through the trap door. She had like two or three injuries in that. They just had better press people than Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. So, It's true.
She went like through the trap and fell. Yeah. Like it was bad.
They had less problems than Spider-Man, but true. I think that's a good thing. So that's it. We're gonna we'll listen to a little bit of Mary Martin, and then we're gonna come back and talk to different stages. We'll be right back. 101. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro.
Nicole Shiro.
just bursting with energy today. And we saved the best for last. We have different stages here and their show, which I'm really interested to talk about. It's called The Magic Fire by Lillian Grog. And here to talk about that, we have the artistic director and the director of this piece, Norman Blumensaat.
Hello.
And then two performers and like icons and stalwarts of Austin Theater, as they are, Jenny Underwood. Say hello.
Hello.
And Karen Jambon.
Hello.
Jenny was all into fixing the microphone. That was so awesome. You were very intent. You were like, I shall fix this.
So, Norman, tell us about this piece.
Well, Lisa, do you know where this piece premiered? It wasn't New York.
Germany.
No.
Oh, I was so close.
Oh, that theater that you have season subscriptions to, right? The Oregon Shakespeare Festival?
That's the one.
Yes.
I was
you,
there.
You ran right out to see their production of Oklahoma, where they changed it to Ado Andy.
Right. Yes, we talked about that last week. And of course, you know that because you listen to my show.
anyway, so this is this woman, Lillian Grog. She's an actress, a playwright, a director of opera. She has worked at the Virginia Opera and Glimmerglass. And this is a play about her family. She grew up in Argentina and eventually came to the U.S. And it is about a family of immigrants, of Viennese and Italian immigrants living in Argentina the summer that Eva Perón dies.
I just love that. Just that little thing. It's so rich.
Well, the first line of the play, among many reasons to do the play, is I am an immigrant in a country of immigrants.
Huh.
I was like, Argentina is a country of immigrants and large Italian population.
Yeah, huge,
my best
large
friend
Italian.
is her last name is Manzini. You know Agustina. You've met Agustina. Yes. She's been here. And
the Spanish there is heavily Italian influenced. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Spanish that you speak there. But anyways, she's also an associate artist of the Old Globe Theater. Mm-hmm. Another theater that you have season subscriptions to, right?
I feel like that Norman wants to give me a hard time today.
Yeah, I do. Because okay. You know, because a bunch of us are, some of us are regional theater children, not New York.
It's
regional
true.
Theater children. So anyways.
He just wants to get in a maniacal laugh. That's all there is to it.
Right. But so anyways, this is a nice, easy play of 12 people on stage almost the entire time.
Yeah, it's
about
amazing.
This family.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So.
Yeah, you told me earlier that the second act, they're on stage. The whole cast is on stage the entire act. Is that correct?
Yes.
Almost.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
It's amazing.
Yes.
That's a lot.
And the central character, the woman character, we see her as kind of like the Glass Menagerie, but we see her as an adult and as an 8-year-old. So it's played by two different actresses. Yes.
That well, or
you
one very
had a Jekyll
versatile.
And Hyde,
yes.
But,
yes.
You
yes.
Know,
or one
you
person.
Could've.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
And who are those two actors?
Natalie Garcia and Lucky Cantu.
Lucky Cantu is the young one?
Yes, the young
yeah.
one.
Yeah, I saw on your website, you can see pictures of her.
Yes, yes.
And you can also see an interview with you.
Yes, yes, you can see
which
an
is,
interview.
Which is lovely.
Me.
You can learn a little bit about the piece, and you can try to get to, which is very difficult for many of us, to get to the inner workings that is Norman Blumensaat.
where is that? Where would one find all that?
At differentstagestheater.org.
Oh, interesting.
So the other thing that's interesting about this play is that the family is the family of people who love opera.
Right.
The father leaves Vienna with two things, a typewriter and his suitcase full of his signed Puccini scores. And to get back to the New York Times, did you read that article where mm-hmm. when Puccini came to New York at the turn of the century, he was a major rock star. You know, there
yes,
was
he
a
was.
Point. Yeah, there was a point when opera was the equivalent of Broadway musicals.
Yep.
And everybody went to it, you know, not thinking that it was anything elitist at all. They went because the music was good.
The Opera House in Buenos Aires is one of 10 theater complexes that's 99.9% perfectly acoustic.
Wow.
It's unbelievable. I spent a day and a half there and went underneath it. we can talk about that another time. But yes, so did you get to hear anything there? I did. Wow. I did. Okay. And I saw ballet perform too.
Oh, wow.
It would be interesting to see how they quantify that 99.9% perfectly acoustic. I would like to see that.
They discussed how there's this special meter and there's this group of folks that go all around and do everything. I've been to a second spot, which is in Croatia, the Pustonia Caves, underneath ground.
Ground floor theater is 94% acoustic.
So I don't know where we are time wise, but we do have a small, so very brief scene.
Time for it.
Okay, we have a very brief scene. Jenny is playing the very happy, that's in quotes, Italian grandmother who was taken to Argentina against her will.
Okay.
So this is later in the play where they talk about marriages, because it's a family of women. Mm-hmm. As the central character keeps saying about the mother, you always said it was a happy family of girls.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, great. Well, this is a scene by Jenny Underwood and Karen Jambon from Different Stages production of The Magic Fire by Lillian Grock.
I want to hear all about the wedding.
Weddings. Ah! I have one of those. Marry a boy from a San Germano, mama say. But no, the welter come over the mountain with flowers and he fill my head with talk of boats and the high seas. Across the sea is a beautiful, he say. How he know? He never been anywhere. But I believe because he bring a white lilac in the afternoon. You will smell the lilac you can't think. Then you end up on the other side of the world. Terrible things, flowers. Men who bring you flowers have plans. So now, I'm here with the black shirts.
That was Mussolini, dear.
He had the brown shirts.
No, that was Hitler.
What does Perón have?
The no shirts.
I can't keep up.
Oh, I want to hear more.
Well, the hard part about it is everyone's on stage the entire time. So finding even a small section that we didn't have to bring
without
12 people, you know, to do.
Well,
a
that's
scene.
That is a challenge for a director.
Yeah. Oh, tell me.
How did you find that? I mean, you have when do you open?
Friday.
Friday. So, but you've staged it already, so
yes,
you know
yes,
how
you're. Yeah.
How did you find that process for yourself?
Well, actually, I mean, I think I've been amazingly lucky to. I mean, I think we have a really great cast, you know, we specifically went out. You know, we have a lot of Hispanic actors, even though, I mean, technically Argentina. I mean, you know, they're really more Italian Hispanic than Latin Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, but so. I mean, I was amazed, you know, play no one's ever heard of, playwright no one's ever heard of. I had a huge turnout of people because it's a wonderful family drama, but it really is a comedy. It's a very strange mix of, you know, drama and comedy. Plus the constant offstage thing of like living in the society, not unlike the society we live in, where everyone is the slippery slope of like, you know, oh, I'm nice today. Oh, I'm not so nice tomorrow. Oh, I should have you picked up. You know, no, we need to have you deported. You know, that kind of slippery slide that military governments sometimes
yes.
go down.
Yeah, yeah. Well, awesome. It sounds like a marvelous piece. I'm looking forward to seeing it. You open on Friday.
Yes.
How long do you play?
Through February 2nd at Trinity Street Theater.
Okay, great. Well, thank you guys for
you.
Being on the show.
Thank
and
you.
Best of luck with everything.
You too.
Okay.
They're like out. They're like, see ya. Drop the mic.
That was Norman Blumenstadt, Jenny Underwood, and Karen Jambon of Different Stages production of The Magic Flute. Playing
Fire.
The Magic Fire.
I was
fire.
Just about
Lily,
to go. Whoa.
By Lillian Grock, playing Friday through February
2nd. Yes.
For more information, you may visit differentstagestheater.org. And opera was a theme here, so I followed that through.
The opera, the opera.
Welcome to the opera.
You know, that show makes me happy.
I know. That's from Natasha Pierre in The Great Comet of 18, whatever the year was.
48, right?
59? 63? I don't know. I used to know
72,
when it was.
72, I know. I can never remember.
Wonderful piece. That was a wonderful show.
Wonderful.
wonderful show.
Next week, with absolutely no fanfare at all, we will have our 500th performance.
Isn't that crazy?
Here at our 500th show. So that'll be lovely. As a reminder to those that listen, and not as a reminder, this is the first time you're hearing it, there will be no Offstage on the Air on the 30th of this month. But there will be a Kim Simpson will be no, not Kim Simpson. Sorry. Who's going to be? I forgot. Oh, DJ Harris will be here and he's going to play some theater related music for you in that spot. January 30th. We will be taking the day off. So we did it. We're done.
Finny.
Thank you. You know all the stuff. We've got to sign off right away. Offstageonair.com. iTunes, all that stuff. We podcast this
Stitcher,
puppy
everywhere. Facebooks, like us.
Yep.
Yada, yada, yada.
So the other show that just closed, that we're very sad about, but
stuff happens
is Once on This Island. It had a nice run there at Circle in the Square. Austin Monitor News is next. Let's go back and listen to The Human Heart from Once on This
Island.
I cannot speak today. Once on This Island. See you, everybody.
Bye.